Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
What's going on, all you crazy ghost enthusiasts out there? It's your boy, Ghost Joe. Welcome to episode 5 of the Warped Reality Podcast. We have a great show for you tonight. I have some great segments and an awesome interview with world-renowned psychic medium, Miss Cheryl Ann Elliott Fletcher. So you're not going to want to miss that. So please stay tuned for all of that. I did want to explain a couple things to you guys, too, before we get into all the paranormal craziness that we have going on tonight. So, those of you that know, I am a correctional officer, right? So, just recently, it's come down that I will probably be going to a new facility soon where I will be spending a lot of time there, doing a lot of hours. So, I'm not sure how often I'll be able to be putting out a lot of content with the show, but I will continue to do so as much as possible. And it really goes by you guys too. I'm going to need some help, you know, because I'm not going to have a lot of time to prepare a lot of stuff. So if you have a paranormal experience that you would like to share, or if you have a paranormal news article that you'd like me to touch on and to talk about, please give me a call, 845-379-1331. Or you could email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. So right now, I'd like to welcome a new family member to the Warped Reality Podcast family. He is a longtime listener ever since the first episode of the Ghost Hacks podcast. He's been loving the podcast. He always likes to contribute a lot of stuff. And he's just an awesome dude. I've known him for 20 years, I guess, something like that, close to that. And his name is Vinny. And he's going to be doing a new segment that right now the going title is Warped Questions, where he's going to go to different public places, you know, concerts, whatever, and all different places, and ask random people some paranormal questions. So that's going to be the new segment. Hopefully the next episode you guys will be hearing that. I picked him because he, like I said, he's a huge fan. He's a good dude, good friend. And to be honest, I've had this thought to do something like this for a little while, but I don't get out much, you know, and Vinny does. Vinny goes to a lot of places, and, you know, and he's not afraid to go up to random people and ask them some random questions. So welcome aboard, Vinny. Happy to have you. And I know you're going to do a great job, and it's going to be an awesome addition to the Warped Reality Podcast. So everybody give him a good Warped Reality Podcast welcome. So right now I'd like to talk to you guys about an article I came across of a couple who caught something quite amazing on their baby monitor. This article was dated September 3rd, 2021, by the way. Parents Cheryl Scott and Robert Thorat of Drogon in East Ayrshire, Scotland, I hope I said that right. I would have re-recorded that, but I'd probably continue to butcher that. Anyway, they put their baby down to sleep on a normal Saturday night. The baby monitor feed is connected to their phones, and it records. So when they checked back a few days later, wait. Why would they check the baby monitor a few days later? Anyway, when they checked it a few days later, they saw what appeared to be ghostly hands in the video. And then the baby monitor moves on its own to face a light that they know they did not leave on a few days earlier. The house used to belong to Cheryl's grandparents, who had passed on a number of years ago. I'll link the article with the video in the show notes for you guys to see this. It's pretty creepy, and it does look quite convincing. So check it out and let me know what you think. You know, could it have been the ghost of Cheryl's grandparents checking on their great-grandchild? Or do you think that this was fabricated? you let me know. So right now we're going to check in with April from April's Creepy Corner, where she's going to discuss some things that have probably terrified people for many, many years, especially since Parker Brothers came out with one of these things a while back. I know I'm scared of it. I have my own story. I know you guys have heard it, and I'm sure you guys have had some stories as well. So check it out. Take it away, April.
Hello, spooky friends. This is April's Creepy Corner, and in this episode, we are talking all about Ouija boards. The mass deaths of the Civil War created a widespread desire to contact the dead, and mediums began marketing their services in major cities around the country. Death had really touched everyone in a way that had never happened before in the U.S., and the Ouija board answered questions no one else could, and it gave people peace of mind. The name Ouija was coined by Helen Peters, a medium who was using the board with her brother-in-law one night in 1890. When she asked what they should call it, the planchette, that's the piece that moves around the board, spelled out Ouija, which the board told her meant good luck. The building where Peters named the board is now a 7-Eleven. Go figure, right? But it does at least have a plaque commemorating the event on the wall. Peters got the first patent, but the business was soon taken over by American entrepreneur William Fold, who began marketing the board mostly in national catalogs. One advertisement in a Sears catalog read, Ouija, the magic game. Remarkable, interesting, mystifying. Apparently answers questions concerning the past, present, and future. As for Helen Peters, she wanted nothing more to do with the board after it allegedly caused serious damage to her family. Some Civil War heirlooms went missing from her home, and she asked the board who took them. The board stated that one of the family members was guilty of the crime. Half the family believed it, and half of them did not. This created a conflict where the family was torn apart. Until her dying day, Helen was adamant in saying that the Ouija board tells lies. Meanwhile, William Fold had his own troubles. While the Ouija board gained popularity, he continued to open new factories, even building the largest three-story building in Baltimore. Here's where it gets strange, though. He went up to the roof of the building to supervise the placement of a flagpole. He was standing near the edge of the roof, holding onto an iron support pole. And according to witnesses, the pole suddenly pulled away, and he fell off the roof backwards. On the way down, he grabbed hold of the sill of an open window, but the window suddenly closed, and it sent him crashing to the sidewalk below. Even after all of that, he had only a few broken ribs, and he was expected to be just fine. That is until he hit a bump in the road on the way to the hospital, which sent one of the broken ribs through his heart. He died on the spot. His family continued to run the business until it was sold to Parker Brothers, which was later bought by Hasbro. Hasbro warns that you should handle the Ouija board with respect, and it won't disappoint you. The Ouija board has become a staple in horror movies, pop culture, entertainment, and spiritual practices. Many see it as a tool to gain demonic portals, while others see it as a way to communicate with the other side. In November of 2014, 35 Bolivian students were hospitalized because of trances, sweating, and rapid heartbeats after playing with the board. There have been stories of mass faintings and hysteria. While skeptics explain that the planchette is moved by the person playing subconsciously, others truly believe that it is a way of communicating with beings beyond our realm. If you have any experiences using a Ouija board, we would love to hear about it. Please email ghostjoeny@gmail.com or call 845-379-1331. Thanks for listening to April's Creepy Corner, and stay spooky.
Thanks again, April, for that awesome segment. Listen, guys, do not mess with the Ouija board if you don't know what you're doing. It's definitely not a toy, okay? But I would like to also extend another opportunity to somebody that would maybe like to be part of the Warped Reality Podcast family. I'm looking for somebody that knows how to do a little bit of audio editing. Someone that could add some ambient music and some sound effects to a segment that I am looking to do with another super fan, Mr. Nat, that many of you have heard from some of his voicemails. He's going to be writing some cool, creepy, spooky stories for us, and I really want to make it come to life. You know, I want to do it the right way. So I need some sound effects, some ambient music, some creepy stuff going on, guys. And I just don't have the time to do it myself. So if you think you know someone, or if you yourself could do something like that and you would like to be a part of this, it's not a paid thing, but, you know, I'll pay you in gratitude. Yeah. So that's just as good, right? But now, for our next segment, I know you guys love it. It's I Read It on Reddit. I was 19 and my campus was old. So old that it was known to be haunted. By known, I mean we always had ghost hunters and paranormal investigators interested in our campus. Our campus was small, too. It used to be a neighborhood in the 1800s. The buildings are historic now, and the neighborhood is the campus. So the classes, everything, is held in these old mansions. You could ask anyone, and we all have haunted stories to tell you. But I was well into my second year and hadn't yet experienced anything, so I didn't believe it. My friend had bought a tarot deck, and she claimed to communicate with the spirit she came into contact with. Now, at the time, I was fairly religious and didn't feel safe with tarot, but she promised me that it was fine. Yet, the readings were always so negative. Anyone who came for a reading got the most negative outcome. Boyfriend hasn't replied to you in an hour, he's cheating. You failed your test, might as well drop out. She also didn't cleanse or do protection. But again, I was a doubter and I hadn't experienced anything until November 7th at 3 a.m. in the morning. I stayed up late all the time talking to my friend. We ended the call at 2:30 a.m. I shut the lights off and was just scrolling on my phone, maybe on TikTok, and I heard three loud knocks at exactly 3 a.m. It wasn't from the wall. It was on my bed frame. There was no logical explanation for it. This continued every night at exactly 3 a.m. for a week. I was convinced I was crazy. 8 days later, it was 2:59 a.m. and I waited. The clock turned to 3 a.m. No knock. Weird, I thought. But I was glad whatever it was left. I closed my eyes for 1 second and heard a soft woman's voice. Hello? Can you hear me? I shot out of bed and flicked the light on. Fuck this school, fuck this room. I was terrified. I ran to my friend's room and she let me sleep on her floor. The next day, my roommate came to me and told me she was spooked the other night. She said, I was laying in bed reading, and I look up and a woman in an 1800s dress was just staring at me. We brought a medium to read our room, and she told us that our tarot friend was not doing proper protection. Therefore, the spirits in our very active area were attracted to our reading and us. She said the spirit was not particularly negative, but was a woman who died young and did not live a fulfilling life. She cannot pass on. We ended up cleansing the area. The medium helped the spirit move on. We never had problems after that ever again. So, listen, guys. Again, tarot, I guess, could be just like the Ouija board. You know, you don't want to mess with it if you don't know what you're doing. It's not saying that you can never do the Ouija board or you can never do the tarot. Just know the rules. Know what you have to do in order to cleanse it, protect yourself and the environment. And actually, on the next upcoming shows, maybe either the next one or the one after that, I'll be doing an interview with a woman who is a practicing witch who also does tarot. So she's going to tell us a little bit about tarot cards and what they do and what you shouldn't do with it. I would tell you her name, but it's a very popular, you'll definitely know her last name, but I'm going to leave you guys guessing for that. So stay tuned because it's going to be a great interview and you're going to love it. So here's the moment you guys have been waiting for. Here is my interview with world-renowned psychic medium, Miss Cheryl Ann Elliott Fletcher. She has been featured on the Travel Channel, as well as having her own radio show. She is well-respected in the law enforcement community for her work in helping with active investigations as well as cold cases. She's a poet, professional blogger, author, paranormal investigator, and just a straight-up wonderful human being. Check my interview out right now with Miss Cheryl Ann Elliott Fletcher.
How you doing?
Hi, Joe. I'm doing good. Oh my goodness.
You know, there's different kinds of psychic abilities, such as mediums, psychic mediums, empaths, sensitives, and probably a whole slew of others. What are the differences between some of them? You know, because I know a lot of them are used interchangeably, you know, a lot of them are used.
Definitely. Well, my professional opinion and working in the field for over 47 years, is basically when it comes to the mediumship, what I've gathered, with based on experience as well as being one myself, mediating is like a communication, like between your spirits, the dead and the living human beings. Well, it kind of goes into, you know, like channeling, seance, when people do seances and trances and Ouija boards and things of that nature when it comes to mediumship. So that's kind of my take on it. What I've learned throughout the years of working with several in mediumship, that's what I've gathered, including myself. But however, the only difference with myself is mine's a godly given gift. So I don't practice the channeling or the seance tables or Ouija boards. I don't get into that. Mine is, my gift is totally natural. So when it comes to that, those, how do I want to say, commercial products, I don't dabble in those because I've had too many experiences with people that have and have had problems because of it later on.
So let's get into that now. When did you first discover your ability?
It would have been right after I had my death experience at the age of 11. It wasn't until, gosh, I would say like 6 months after that happened. It was a kind of a bizarre situation, you know, how we are laying in bed sometimes and we think we're sleeping or dreaming. But in fact, what happened was I had my very first vision of my own brother's death, and he was in fact in a coffin. And so of course I woke my mom and I was terrified because he was one of my favorite brothers. And I explained to her, I said, you know, Pat's going to die. And she's like, well, just go back to bed, you know, because you're probably having a dream. Well, in fact, it did happen at 1:38 in the morning. The police did arrive at my mother's door and informed her that my brother Pat had committed suicide.
Oh, sorry. That's crazy. Wow. Wow. So what was your initial reaction when you started realizing that you had this ability? You know, was it, did you realize that it was something, you know, special? Did you think of it as like a curse, or like how, what was your initial reaction basically?
Well, like anybody at the age of 11, you don't talk about it because, well, people look down on you like you were ready for the nut house basically, or they would think you would have like, a schizophrenia. But the studies that I've done, just let me touch on that. Schizophrenia, it's to me, is super sensitive people. And of course, nobody wants, a lot of people don't want to deal with that. It's better to medicate, thinking that it's schizophrenia when it is truly not. But when I first found out that my vision, my dream, everybody said it was a dream. I said, no, that was a vision. When I first found out, I really kind of like hid behind the veil of it all because I was afraid of what people would think of me, even at the age of 11. So I really, really didn't come out into the public with my gifts until I was more like in my late 20s.
Right. So how does your ability come to you? How does it, is it visions? How does it actually, how do you see?
Well, when I'm reading someone or reading a case or whatever, I just really focus on it. And before I know it, I start seeing it in real time. In my head, it's real time, as if I were in the situation at that time. So it's kind of like, I tell people, it's almost like seeing a mini movie, kind of like, you know, black and white at first until it starts coming in a little bit clearer. Then there's clarity and color. And then I can see what's going on in a person's life. And that's pretty much how it starts. I just really focus in on it. And, you know, it's just the mind's eye being able to see into somebody. And that's how it happens for me.
What was your family's reaction when they realized that, you know, you were able to do this? Like, what was their initial reaction? What's their reaction now? How do they feel about it?
Well, it's kind of bizarre because that first incident with my mom always looked at me as a different kind of child. Whenever I would tell her that I was seeing something or I could hear something, or, you know, I felt something, she was very, very much so supportive in it. She never, ever once said to me, "Oh, you're just imagining it." No, she actually said, "What else do you see?" You know, or "What else are you feeling?" So my mom, at that tender age, was always very supportive. Now, it wasn't until my late 20s when my other family members learned of it. And it was so bizarre because my sister Joni, who at the time was living in California, she told me about a lady friend that her boyfriend was shot in cold blood. And her girlfriend at the time was obviously dealing with that. And I started telling her what really happened. And she said, she was like totally quiet. And she was like, "How did you know that? You don't even know about the case. I'm out in California and you're in Nebraska." And I said, "I don't know. It just came to me. It's just, I could see it happening. I could tell you who it was, you know, and everything like that." And she was totally stunned. And then, of course, my sister Cindy caught on to it and she started going to ghost hunts with me and promoting to her friends who I was. And then I come to find out 2 years ago that my brother Vance, who is the third oldest in the family of boys, has been hiding behind his psychic abilities for years, and he finally let that out. So everybody's totally receptive to it, totally.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, in my show, and, you know, since I was a kid, I've had, you know, experiences, paranormal experiences. I've seen full-bodied apparitions. You know, it's weird for me. Like, I've always said, I don't know if I can't say I'm a magnet because I only have really a handful of experiences, but the ones that I have had are quite significant, you know, and a lot of them actually happen whenever I used to do something stupid like, "Oh, well, give me a sign." And then something would always happen. Always, like, it never failed for me, you know. So I mean, I always kind of said, well, you know, I guess I'm a little bit of a sensitive, but I mean, I guess, as they say, I mean, everybody kind of has an ability to an extent. Is that pretty fair to say? Like, everybody has something.
Yeah, that's very true, Joe. We all have it. We all are wired for it. But as you know, a lot of people will deny it because of whatever their reasoning is. And then there are some that will actually seek out people to help them develop it better, and which I do. I'm a life coach and I do that with a lot of rising, you know, people that are feeling like they have a gift and they're not sure. So, you know, I do a lot of that counseling through it, sure.
You know, at times I feel like I want to develop something, but at the same time, like, you know, I don't want to be, you know, laying in my bed and having 1,000 things watching me and talking to me at the same time too. But I guess there's no on and off switch, right? I mean, you can't really turn it off. You know, it's either you accept it or you don't.
How I deal with that, Joe, is being, I've done this for 48 years. You know, I'll be laying in bed at night and I'll have a vision of something coming toward me. And it's like, not tonight. I'm going to sleep. And, you know, I just raise my hand up and say, "Not now." But there have been times where I'll be sleeping, and of course, I'm yanked out of the bed, or my hair is pulled, or I'm shaken, or I know that somebody's sitting next to me. And when that happens, it's pretty prominent. and is obviously very important for that spirit to be able to get it, you know, the story out that needs to have happen, so I can bring clarity to it for whoever the message is for. So, you know, I'll wake up and I'll go, okay, what do you want? And it's like, that's when I get it all.
Wow.
You know, when you demand, like, you know, get out of here, I don't want you around here, I don't want you here, does that, like, is it strong? Is your will strong enough to will these things away?
They can be. That it really falls into the sincerity of what you say, because they know how you feel long before you do. So if you were to say, I demand you out of here, and you mean it, and you're in a strong, clear voice, and you're not, you know, messing around with the idea, you know, they will. They will, in fact, not bother you, but they will lay dormant until they can bother you.
So you've done TV and private, you know, readings, gallery readings, and locations, and all sorts of criminal investigations. Which one would you say was like the most rewarding for you to be able to do? I mean, I'm sure they all are at, you know, at some point, but, you know, which one do you feel like was maybe like your calling for doing it?
The cool thing about that is I went into criminal justice and I had my bachelor's degree in it, because there's nothing more rewarding than coming upon a scene and or being asked to review and read a scene to bring clarity and also closure to the family. That has been the most rewarding, especially when working with police and working with, you know, investigators on a criminal situation, may it be murder or, you know, robbery, rape, whatever. But that's most rewarding when I can provide the accurate information as to what really did happen and who was involved and where they can find the evidence, and knowing that the family can rest as well as the person that was murdered.
You have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. Is that right?
That is correct. You're at Doane University here in Lincoln, Nebraska. You bet. I obtained my bachelor's degree in criminal justice 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'm a correctional officer, so I know a different kind of criminal justice area, I guess.
Yeah, you do, but you're in it too. It's in your blood. I think once you get into it, it's
in
your blood.
That's very, very true. I can't see myself going to any kind of customer service job after this one, that's for sure.
I think being in that field is very rewarding, because it really opens your eyes to not only what, you know, different courts can do, what level of, you know, law you're in, and you can really see it from the inside to the outside, as well as outside in. So you gain a real good perception on what other people don't see. And it does harden you a little bit. You know, people did say to me after I graduated, I was a little bit more standoffish, but it wasn't because, you know, I became a B. It was more in the idea that I became stronger in reality of what people don't really see, that officers go through, the judges go through, and our, you know, our criminal defenses go through, because they have no concept until they're involved. And unfortunately, sometimes not for the right reason.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, nobody knows, you know, as far as in my profession, nobody knows what goes on in jail unless either you've been there or you work there. You know, you could never know what goes on in there. You know, but, can you tell me some of your favorite experiences that you've had as readings? Or
I think the most favored is when when I sit in front of somebody, and when I read them, it's always, you know, I give a distance of like 3 feet, is when I can reach and ask for permission to reach and touch someone literally with my hand, and be able to tell them that they're hours away from a sudden heart attack or a medical condition or a mental condition that they need to work on and or seek help in. Because even in your field, you know what all lives matter mean. And when it comes to, you know, saving somebody's life, whether it be mentally, physically, or whatever, that's probably the most rewarding, is when I can have somebody look at me and say, for an example, oh, you're kidding. I just had a heart workup, and I turned and looked at his wife and I said, he needs to go to the hospital. And he, in fact, went from the reading to the hospital, and they put him on the treadmill. They did another test on him, and sure enough, he was real close to having a major heart attack. So for me, that's the most rewarding, because I feel like I saved somebody's life just by a touch.
Is there a code of ethics that psychic mediums, or, you know, that you guys are either supposed to follow, or is there like an unwritten code of ethics to where, like, you won't tell somebody, you know, when they're going to die, or, you know, stuff like that? Like, is there limitations to what you would say to somebody?
You know, Joe, I've been asked that so many times, and my response is, you know, God gave me this gift for a reason. It wasn't to do his job by telling people when their demise would be, because that is fully his job. So if I were to go around and tell people, or anybody would tell people when they're going to die, actually they're doing a disservice to God, because that's his job. I don't do it. It's unspoken. People know me because the questions like that are looked at me and asked, I just look at them and smile. And I say, well, you know what? I might be able to see that, but I'm not the one to tell you. You can't cheat death. If it's going to happen to you, just because I would tell you, doesn't mean you can run out and change it. No matter what you do, you're not going to change it, because that's God's will. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
People that have heard my podcast, as far as the Ghost Hacks podcast, and now it's the Warped Reality podcast, I'm very cautious with psychics and psychic mediums, because I feel like there's so many charlatans out there. Is there like a certain way that if somebody were to go to a psychic medium to tell if these people are actually being truthful, or it's just, you should just go by word of mouth of people that you know?
Well, first of all, you're very good at profiling. You've been geared for that for a long time. You've been watching people for a long time. This is why you went into the field that you do, because you are that type of personality that has to know. And you are not settled until you know fact. So leading into your question, when it comes to being read by somebody, your biggest clues that they are a fake fraud and all they want is your money is on how much they charge you. Because you, for one, like myself, my rates, the reason why people come to me is because I don't gouge people. And not only that, I go longer than what my time set is for, according to the pricing that I choose. So the first thing is the pricing. The second thing would be, if they cannot at least be 90% accurate on what they are picking up in you without you telling them anything, giving them clues, anything. And if they're at least 90% right, because nobody is 100% right, then you have yourself the real deal. Now, another way to find out if they're fake or fraud or whatever is if, in fact, you can go onto your applications like Facebook, et cetera, and see who's looking at your page. Well, if people were to do that, if they obtained a psychic, if that psychic has gone on your page and actually looked at your life, then you've got yourself a fake. And the other way to determine whether or not they're real or not is that when they're talking to you, if they're not looking you dead smack in the eyeballs, then they're fake. Because the total connection, being able to read into someone, is through eye contact. Now, if this individual is looking away, kind of fumbling for words, basically fishing is what I call it, then you got yourself a fake.
Yeah. I mean, my, you know, my mom had passed away about 10 years ago. And, you know, the one thing I always tell a lot of people is, you know, it's the people that, like you said, the people that don't charge, but also the people that, like, for example, my dad went to a store and somebody just came over and said, "Hey, by the way, you know, your wife says this, or you know, those, to me, those are the real ones." You know, those people are, you know, because they don't know my father. They just came over, delivered a message, and they were gone, you know? Yeah. And, you know, I think, so that's why I know that, you know, and that's why I'm talking to you as well, because I can't say connection. I guess so. But like I said, I'm very weary about psychics. But when I started talking to you, I said, no, I like her. I think, you know, I know I could talk to you. I know I for some reason I had a good feeling about you. So I'm like, no, I have to have her on the show.
Well, that's nice, Joe, because let me explain something to you. Because you are intuitive as well, there's that certain kind of chemistry and energy between two people or four people or whatever, that when great minds think alike and the energy is on the same level, you know, you just know without question whether or not that person is real or not. And we all have that. So with that being said, you know, I really feel honored by that. I really do.
Well, I feel really honored that you're here with us today. So thank you very much for that. So what endeavors are you currently involved in at the moment? What are you doing right now?
Well, I'm currently writing a book. It's Schizophrenia versus the Afterlife. I have done medical studies with a few people that have actually been off their medications and put one in a room and me in the other on a ghost hit to see if, in fact, what they hear and see is equal to what I hear and see. And off medication, per okay through the doctor for the study. So I am, in fact, when I did these studies and realized that we're just super sensitive people, I had to write about it, because too many pharmacists, too many doctors are so willing to put a medication on somebody just so they don't have to deal with it. Because a lot of in the world, in society, a lot of people are not ready for people that are super sensitive because of all the fake and people that have been taken for money and people that have been, you know, really diverted into the wrong way of being told something like that death experience this lady had, or said she was going to die. That was one right there. That's a huge discredit to people that are real. So I'm writing a book on the schizophrenia versus the afterlife and being able to distinguish when you really have a medical condition and when you really have a super sensitive individual that society just can't handle.
That's an ongoing war that'll never, you know, the spiritual world or the paranormal supernatural world, exactly, against science. I don't think that'll ever end.
And the other, the other ones that I'm doing, I mean, I have a few endeavors going on. I have an actual, alien photo that happened, to me at about maybe four years ago. I went outside and I lived on a farm, and I went out back because I kept hearing the cows doing, you know, some weird stuff. And I happened to take my phone outside and did a panoramic view, and I captured a true alien that was standing within four feet of me. It scared me so bad it knocked me on my hiney, and I got up and ran into the house and later realized I captured this thing. And the next plan is to go to Skinwalker Ranch and let them look at this photo, because Skinwalker Ranch is loaded, as we all know, with alien activity and also paranormal.
Wow. That's, yeah, I think I would definitely fall too if I saw something, especially that close. That's, like I said, I've seen paranormal things, but never an alien or a UFO or anything. That's Actually, I just had somebody on the show. My last interview was with Steve Neal, who's been, you know, who's had been abducted since he was a child, actually. And he had some amazing things to say too, which was cool. If somebody is experiencing psychic ability, what kind of advice would you give them? Would you tell them like to hone their skill, to increase it, or like how would you, you know, if somebody came up to you and said, "Hey, listen, you know, I think I'm having visions. I think, you know, I don't know, am I going crazy?" Like what would you tell them?
Well, believe it or not, Joe, I get that all the time. Sure. When I first, I met a lady named Jennifer at actually a ghost hunting event in Farrar, Iowa, at the Farrar school that's totally haunted. And she came to me because she said, "Well, I know a lot about you. You're well known and what you do. And, you know, I have these visions, I hear these things, and you know, what do I do with it?" And I said, "Well, first of all, never deny it. Don't ever let anybody tell you that you're nuts or that you need medical attention." I said, "Because you're gifted and you've been selected, not like you went out and found it, but you've been selected because apparently God knows that, you know, you're not going to do anything bad with it. So enhance it, improve it, you know." And I help, like I said, through my life coaching, which is what I do for a business. I have a lot of people that have these abilities and I always encourage it. I always say, don't listen to what, you know, other people say, because what you have inside of you needs to come out. That's why you've been gifted, is to be able to enhance it, to share it with others.
How do you deal with skeptics? You know, if you're doing a reading or if you tell somebody what you do, like how do you, and they're like, "Ah, that's baloney. Nobody knows how to do that stuff." Like, what?
I have a beautiful example. Sure. JD Campbell, good friend of mine, used to have the ghost hunting team called Paranormal Seekers of Iowa. And the first time he learned of me, which was through a huge event, and he come right up to me because he got a friend that had told him about me. He said, "Oh, she's whack, you know?" And so he come up to me and he says, "So I hear you're psychic," and all cocky like. And I said, "Yeah, you know, just who I am. No big deal." And he said, "Oh, really?" He goes, "I think you're totally probably whack. And, you know, you probably, you know, do people out of money." I said, "Wow. Really?" I said, "Well, I understand that you're here tonight to do ghost hunting. So help me to understand how you can believe in ghost hunting, but you can't believe in a psychic, considering a psychic will tell you the accurate information, what you're looking for in an investigation." And he said, "You're on." Well, that night, he was completely blown away. That's how I handle the skeptics. I was like, "Come on, just bring it. You know, you need me to prove it? Let's go."
I like that. What TV shows have you been on? I know you said you've done.
Oh my goodness. I've been on a lot of TV channels for events that I hold or have been invited to. I was on the Travel Channel. That would have been about 2 years ago. And that was bizarre because I did an investigation on a legend that's in Nebraska City, Nebraska. It's called the Seven Sisters Road. And the legend was, back in the 1800s, that a man had hung all of his children on the dirt road in the trees. And he went nuts. Wow. Well, I went ahead and contacted the place and I met with Nate Sturm, who is the owner. And I went up on an 800-foot hill and did a reading on grave sites that they didn't even know that was there. And while there, my ex-husband at the time was filming all of this. He was a photographer, filmer. And while filming it, he actually captured, while I was talking to this little boy that was one of the victims, this little boy came up and around me and took my left arm and grabbed it really hard enough to put imprints in my arm, as you could see it happening and releasing and leaving the marks. And it was all on camera. And so what happened was it was publicized in the Omaha World Herald in Omaha, Nebraska. And it sat dormant, you know, for about a year. And then out of nowhere, Travel Channel was looking for the most terrifying locations in America. And they happened to pick up that story from Omaha. And they reached out to Nate and myself. We went back up and we did the filming of it, the actual, and they took the, you know, the real footage, and it was, it blew them away. So when we got on television on the Travel Channel, like I said, the episode is really called The Unnatural World, and it's the most terrifying locations of America. When we filmed up there, it was bizarre because a lot of things did happen while there, and it blew their minds, and we ended up on the Travel Channel. And when we first did, it was just one airing, and then it went to two, and then it went to three. And that means because the ratings were so high on that particular episode that it just, it was ginormous.
Wow. If someone needs help or would like a reading, how could they get in touch with
you? Well, the best way would be through Facebook. It's under Cheryl Ann Elliott Fletcher. That's my real name, full legal name. And just message me right there on Messenger and or... I just tell people to, they can email as well at my email address would be cheryl.fletcher@doane.edu. And that's Doane as in doane.edu for education. Or they can simply pick up their phone and call me at 402-217-6334. And I do everything by appointment only.
Right. But again, thank you so much, Cheryl, for being on the show. I'm going to have, you know, the links and everything that you said. I'll have it in the show notes so everybody could get to, you know, quicker. And I'll let you know when the show is on. So thank you. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
So that'll do it for episode 5 of the Warped Reality Podcast. Thank you very much to Miss Cheryl Ann Elliott Fletcher for the awesome interview. Thank you to April for your awesome segment of April's Creepy Corner, as always. And thank you to you guys for continuing to listen and checking out warpedrealitypodcast.com. Episode 6 will be available on Friday, October 8th, so please don't forget to check that out. Have a great night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Warp Reality Podcast. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warpedrealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can leave me a voicemail at 845-379-1331 or email me at ghostshowny@gmail.com. You could do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or warpedrealitypodcast.com. Have an awesome night, everyone, and don't forget to change your shorts.